In the last episode, we took a look at the college process for Islamic students and staying true to one's beliefs in the college process. We now turn to how to best present those beliefs in the interview process. I'll be joined today by Nina Berler of Uncommon Apps. Nina advises high school students and their families, focusing on how applicants can differentiate themselves in the admissions process. Previously, Nina was a college counselor and curriculum consultant at the Hudson School in Hoboken, New Jersey. She has also advised educational startups. Prior to transitioning to K-12 education, Nina directed the executive education business, or KPMG. Nina has an AB with honors from Brown University and an MBA from the Stern School of Business, New York University. She holds a certificate with distinction in college counseling from UCLA Extension. Nina is a professional member of the IECA and a member of the NACAC. Her blogs and articles have appeared in Forbes.com, Parentology, College Confidential, and Link for counselors. Nina, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for having me. It's always a delight to talk about the college counseling business.
Yes. So, you know, on that note, could you explain your background and how you got into college counseling? And
absolutely. So my background is a mix of teaching, counseling, strategy, marketing, and curriculum. No matter where I was always doing things like that. And I've had a corporate career and then an educational counseling consulting career. But they were really closely related. So let me explain. Prior to working with my favorite audience, I always tell everybody my favorite audience are teenagers, probably your favorite audience too. I worked in a big four consulting firm for 10 years. And when I was there, I developed educational programs for executives and for clients of the firm. And at the same time, I loved teaching and education, so I was an adjunct at Fordham and at Hunter and so on. But then when my son was young, I made the big call, Alex. It was time to kind of say goodbye to the big four and instead focus on that teen audience that I always loved so much. So on the way to building up my practice, I took on work in curriculum development, holistic essay scoring for ETS. I advised different ed tech firms from Japan, France, US, whatever, including a spinoff of Kaplan Test Prep. And I worked as I went and started to build the practice. I often got students who were sort of needing to work on their core skills, particularly in English, language arts, learning development, and that sort of thing, and persuasive writing. And as I worked with those students, I just saw, hey, this college and career counseling thing, this is like my thing. Like, I really want to do this. So as a result of all of that, I've been in the business at least 15 years now. And 5 years, I served as a college counselor for a school in Hoboken, New Jersey, where I built their program and I taught an interviewing course and I taught something that we call junior seminar to teach the students how to write for college and so on. And at the same time, before I embarked on the official college counseling career, I was an alumni interviewer for Brown. So again, you can kind of see all the pieces sort of wove together at a certain point.
Yes, that is an eclectic background. Very interesting. Now, it seems like you've worked both in public and private. Could you maybe just briefly highlight the kind of the differences there?
Okay, sure. So I worked in a school. I worked for, a big four firm. So, of course, that was a whole different, the clients were companies, and I worked with executives of those companies. And then, as I said, I worked in the ed tech space. So a lot of startups, and I would go into New York and, listen to the pitches and all that kind of stuff, because I have that in my college background, in my grad school background, my MBA. But whatever my role was, Alex, I wound up sort of being the go-to person when something needed promoting or editing or more precise writing and that sort of thing. So when I said, okay, college counseling, I think that's my thing, it was a chance to bring all that together. And as you mentioned, since it's sort of an eclectic background, but it kind of makes sense in this regard, I find that I get so many students, and as I'm sure you do, you know, where they're 15, 16, 17 years old, and they don't really kind of get the world that they're going to go into.
Oh, you're kidding.
And so I often will draw on that knowledge of working with, you know, a very established firm, an international company, startups and that sort of thing, and help students get.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I get so many students, I bet you, you know, you can really relate to this. And they come to meet me and I say, what do you want to do? And they say, business. And they really, most of them don't trade and invest and they don't really get what that is. Right. So there's so much education in the college counseling space.
No doubt.
And I just find a real kind of turn on. It's really
exactly
fun.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned you got into, you know, ed consulting about 15 years ago or so.
Yes.
Is that when you founded Uncommon Apps?
Yes. Yes. Uncommon Apps was about 15 years old. And the name, of course, is a play on the common application.
Right.
So, but who wants a common application, right? I hope none of my students are doing common applications because I know when I look at their previews before they submit, they're anything but that.
That's a good point. It's a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
It really is. And if there's anything my students learn from me, it's when you apply to college, you might have these incredible credentials and compete in math, you know, forums and model UN and do all these incredible things. But if you're not interesting to your target colleges, you got a problem, right?
Exactly.
So you need to be interesting and not stereotypical, which is another thing I come across, and stereotypical in many different ways. Mm. So again, you know, students have these stunningly strong credentials, but they might not set them apart because we all know what goes on in the admissions process, particularly
right.
those highly desirable colleges that are bombarded with students whose applications might be anything but uncommon. So there you go.
They're all sterling. I mean, they all have high test scores. They all have a well-polished essay. They all have good grades, you know, sure.
They do, and they need to get it, you know, that the challenge lies beyond that. And what I love about the college process, and I'm sure you do too in your business, since we have the same client base, is that it's such a life skills-based business. So I tell the students and I tell the parents, whatever anxiety you're going through, you know, we're going to be very deliberate about this. You know, it really is going to have outcomes. But this is a business about communicating, setting deadlines, meeting deadlines, right? Getting to know yourself, getting to know other people, improving your writing, improving your speaking, making videos. It's a life skills business. And that's why I've always loved it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've been in this world for quite some time. I was a teacher for 15 years before I got into this space. I guess I take it for granted because whenever I speak to a parent, you know, there's just not a lot of general knowledge out there about the consulting process. And so, you know, a lot of it is unexpected to parents, what it's going to look like, what's needed, like the skills that are needed and why. You know, I guess it's just not a career that's really well understood, I guess. And yet, basically everyone with kids goes through this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think from the parent side, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours, but, you know, they revved up their kid in many cases that, you know, you're going to achieve A, B, and C, and it's going to get you into X, Y, Z university.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work that way. And how many times have I met students and they say, I want to go to blank university.
Right.
Say, well, that's really interesting. Alex, have you ever been there? Oh, no. Well, how can you tell me that you really want to go there? Well, it's the best, right? And you get all this kind of chatter and, you know, it often will, it'll come from the peer network. It'll come from things they hear in school.
Right.
But it's so much of it is parent education as well in this process. And overall, the parents are really good, but there's a thorough educational thing that has to go on with them as well as their scholars.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a deconstruction as much as a creative and building process, because you have to kind of deconstruct, as you've alluded to, all those assumptions.
Very much, you know, and I have, whenever I do an advisory meeting with a new family, and it doesn't matter what year they are, you know, an agenda item is, and again, it's welcome to the college counseling process. This is task-driven. It is highly structured. It's about communicating effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, finding your niche and whatever.
Yeah.
Well, The agenda item I have, among others, is understand how colleges make admissions decisions, right? And while I can't guarantee this is how they're going to make your kid's decision, let's just talk about the key elements in this and how we bring them together. And again, I remember, as you probably do, when the holistic word used to be thrown around and we weren't all sure it was really real, right? Mm-hmm. And then after 2020, it became extremely real. But, you know, I get the school profile up and I talk about the components of the application and the whole thing, because upfront, parents and students need to know how this thing works. Mm. And they need to understand, you know, that there are priorities institutions have that they're never going to know.
Yes, there is a bit of book and dagger about it there, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Backroom decisions. It's interesting you talking about it, too. It occurs to me that there is a very set end goal in mind in consulting. For all of its nuance, for all of its detail and artistry, you are trying to get into the college at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, you are. And, you know, what I learned to tell students and families over time is we want you to have options, right? I mean, your short-term goal or your two-year goal, whatever it is, might be to get into Yale, right? But how realistic is that? And should that be your goal? Our goal as consultants is to make sure that your student has options. Mm. And in order to have those best options, you're going to go through this process and you're going to understand how all these things come together. And then when it comes to us, Alex, working together, it's about a very diligent one-on-one process where you can really put together the various components that you have to take advantage of in the application process to tell your story.
Mm. I mean, if you do have options, right, you have options for your end goal. And a lot of it, too, is kind of like a coming of age, like a personality discovery as well. The last thing you would want that to be is already figured out from the beginning.
We know how much of that changes. And the coming of age thing, you know, sometimes I'll tell parents, and I bet you get this in your side of the business all the time, is, you know, we know this is going to work out, but we're not sure when. Or we know Alex is going to come to this reality, but we're not sure when he's going to do it. And that's the reason that sometimes transfer, every year I'll get a transfer student or two, mm-hmm. and they have the most incredible results. Mm. And the reason is that they have a degree of maturity that they didn't have a year or two before that.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. We've sort of hinted at this already, but what's the greatest challenge that you found in educational consulting?
Yeah, I think when I kick back and think about it, I alluded to this earlier, that the notion and the communication by the consultant to the client, family, parent, student, is we can't control what goes on in a lot of this process. That these colleges set priorities, and it could be how many students they want from Nevada, you know, what countries they're going to be recruiting from, how many first-gen students they want, who they want from rural areas of the United States, right? You know, who they want in the, you know, the classics department. There are all these things that shape what goes on the college's end that you, parent, and you, great student, are never going to know, right? And so while you come here and you say, I hope anyway, you've done the best testing you can do, you know, you can write a colossally good essay, you know, you've done great in school, that you still have to take advantage of every chance you get to display these various things about your character and your ambitions and your persona and all of this, but you can't control what the college might do in the end.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I'm sure you do, Alex, I get students, and this is a fun part of being a college counselor, that I get students from public schools, boarding schools, you know, international schools and so on. And there are some of the cultures that are very set in their ways. It's not right or wrong. It's just sort of how they grow up.
Right.
And they expect that, you know, and I get a lot of, you know, an immigrant population where they've been very successful immigrants to the United States and they want to raise their kids to have all these opportunities and so on, that the process doesn't always work the way they think it's going to work. Yeah. So there's a lot of education just on that part of it.
I mean, there are things you can control in it and there are things that you can't. Honestly, I get it. I mean, as a parent of three myself, you've invested a lot right? I mean, especially the way that parenting is done these days, you know, with a lot of people very, very invested in their kids' lives and their futures.
They are. And they're mostly, you know, they're great people, right? Interesting people, dynamic people, great, you know, again, the multicultural facet and what you meet as, you know, who you meet as a counselor and who you work with. Yeah. It's really fun and interesting. But there's still that hard sell of that, you know, you think, you know, and this is part of, we need to separate the student applicant from the parent. Formal ways for doing that. But when my students hit the midpoint of the junior year, I say to them, congratulations, you're an applicant now, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to treat you differently. We're going to work together differently.
Yeah.
They sign off. Here's a statement of understanding. Here is what my role is. Here's the parent's role, and here's Nina's role.
That's a good idea.
And I see, you know, I know we were going to talk about interviewing today, but boy, it all ties together, you know, with essay writing and with interviewing, that, you know, the educational process, you know, from the start, from a counselor to a student is, it's got to be authentically you, Alex. It's not your parent, right?
Right.
You don't want to read things that sound like a parent or a doctor or a lawyer wrote them.
And that shows.
You don't want to hear you speak the way you think
shows,
you
doesn't
should
it?
Speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can tell when something's cooked, right?
In a second. And I remember back to when I used to do alumni interviews, I could tell then, you know, and I tell the students this with the interviews and the essays and whatever. They get it. You know, there's a sincerity, there's a style, there's a tone that is going to pour through your application if it's uniquely your own.
No doubt.
And if it's not uniquely your own, boy, they're going to really be able to tell.
Here are a couple of points that stuck out to me after the first segment of my conversation with Nina. One theme was the role that college counseling takes on in a student's experience right around that age, about 17. What was interesting was that she positioned basically counseling as a deconstruction, in that you have to deconstruct all the expectations and dreams and hopes that are perhaps not based on a knowledge of the college counseling process and might be unrealistic or not really targeted effectively from the child's perspective. So I think a lot of the work of a counselor is actually deconstructing and taking apart those preconceived notions from parents in order to kind of reset the dial. And that can be a delicate process considering how much has gone into those expectations. That's a lot of dreaming. You know, by the time your kid hits 17 years old, you've been thinking about kind of their future, this seminal moment, and determining their future for a long time, for several decades. So there's a lot to kind of weed through there. And I think that may be an unappreciated part of college counseling. Another major theme that stuck out was this concept basically that it has to be originally with the student. It has to be the student at the center of the whole process as far as Nina is concerned. I don't think that's necessarily the same with all college counselors. So you get a sense here with where she stands in this whole triangulation of counselor, student, and parent. There's different philosophies based on that triangulation, which party should sort of be at the center of the process, which one should take the most say in the whole process, you know, between those two, who should be spending those time together, which parts of the application should be determined by which duo. So you can see how there'd be a lot of different kind of philosophies on how to handle that very complex dynamic. The counselor has an impression of how they want things to go. The parent has an impression of how they want things to go. And so does the child. So does the student. So you need to kind of find the truth somewhere in between. Nina has, I would say, somewhat unique approach in that she is very student-centered, and that she would like the student to really become the center of the process. And that's, I think, an effective one. And, you know, I think when a student is turning 17, 18, that's young adulthood. This is really a moment of coming of age. It's really a moment of determining who they're going to be, who they want to be. And I think with the proper education and the proper resources provided to them, then they can indeed have that type of moment. So I do think that's an effective strategy, but again, not a unique one. So you do need to give some thought, you know, if you're out there shopping for college counselors, as to how you want them to sort of figure out this triangular relationship.
What are ways that a student should prepare?
Absolutely.
College interview. Yeah.
Yeah. And anything, and again, life skills, right? You got to prepare. And there are many ways you prepare, if it's an internship interview, college interview, whatever it is, right? And so knowing going in, you need to be authentic and you need to, you know, work on, you know, whatever it is about how you present yourself. There are a couple of big areas for a college interview. You had better be prepared. So the first, I'll call it familiarity with the target college, right? So, you know, say in the areas you and I live in, we know there are certain groups of colleges that are incredibly popular. And so if we picked on Boston College, Georgetown, and Villanova, you know, you got that thing going on. They were very similar. But no way should a student going into a Georgetown interview use his material that he prepped for Boston College in Georgetown, right?
Yeah.
You've got to know, right, that college the best way you can. And there's so many dynamite ways to prep yourself for a college interview about the target college.
Like what?
Instagram posts, web pages, virtual events, you know, after 2020 and thereafter, some very aggressive marketers led the way in this, but all the other colleges followed, having these really dynamic admissions sites, you know, landing pages. Do you want to speak to a virtual admissions or sign up for our session here? This kind of thing. So a student can really learn before they have that sit-down interview, whether it's live in person or whether it's virtual. The college puts out even news releases on a website. And I know, you know, in our business, we're always going down to the bottom of the college webpage, and I look for news, and you get great stuff about the college. Mm. And the student would learn just as if they were going on a corporate job interview, right? That they can extend the dynamic conversation and bring to the college or to the interviewer, I kind of get it. You know, I'm knowledgeable. I'm aware. I do my homework. I do my assignment.
Yeah, that is. Well, in a lot of ways, that's your first homework assignment, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is a big deal. And again, I can't emphasize how much the prep and the expression that goes with a college interview is mirrored in the college essays, right? Particularly in the supplemental essays, not the personal statement. Essays.
Right.
Some of the questions are even going to be the same. Maybe you answered it for Villanova, and then you go on your Georgetown interview, and you go, oh, I feel really good because I did this.
Doesn't mean it's the same school, though, does it?
Yeah. You know, you got to be very aware who you're speaking with. And I tell them this too, Alex, with interviews, with essay writing, with video prep, whatever. The more you do it, the better you get, right?
Well, yeah.
So be thankful. I know it might be a stressor, but be really thankful you're going through this now, because you're just going to be you're going to be a better person and a better candidate as a result of having done it. And there's something else I wanted to emphasize in the prep, and it's a theme that I have seen so strong running through college applications the last, I'm going to say 5 years particularly, but even before that. And it plays to what an interviewer looks for on the other side of that interview, right? Which is, do you know that campus community? And when you're interviewing, that interviewer wants to picture you at Boston College, Georgetown, or, you know, whoever it is, Pomona, right? I don't need to pick on, you know, the Jesuit schools that way. But that is so important to kind of get the vibe of the campus and bring it into your positioning and your responses on the interview.
I just wanted to circle briefly back around to something you alluded to. I wasn't really familiar with this, but they have virtual events. So you go and you ask questions, or you
exactly.
What do those look like exactly?
So when I think of great marketing colleges, I think of Tulane and Northeastern. Okay. And interestingly enough, the guy who ran Tulane's went to Northeastern. So there you have it, right? But Tulane is the school I remember that did this the best, the earliest, right? Meet with an admissions rep, you know, sign up for our session on Tuesday night, or, you know, whatever. They had all these sessions that a student can do virtually. And I bring that into my counseling as well as the interview prep, because why would you fly to New Orleans before you did this kind of thing, where you went on and you availed yourself of the knowledge that you could get, not just reading a website. Anybody can read a landing page, right?
Right.
But availing yourself of the conversation and the postings and the other things that these colleges are doing for marketing purposes, you can learn so very much. And then if you love what you see, then maybe you go to New Orleans.
So you can just grill them and just question these officials about what the school's like exactly so that you appear that much more prepared.
Yeah, you just want to show, you know, in a kind way, again, positive, upbeat way, that you're knowledgeable about that campus and that
community. That's right.
What they want. That's what they're looking for when they read the app.
Cool. All right. So what are some common questions?
Yeah.
To get to the interview.
Yeah, definitely. Get to the interview. So there are some questions when I do a session with a student or when I wrote the little ebook or whatever, everybody has to know them. So the first thing is open-ended. Tell me about yourself, right?
That's intimidating.
Alex, tell me about yourself, right?
Well, and that's very open.
And they've got to know how much do you say the right way,
right?
And I'll do it and I'll critique them. Oh, you know, you did a little bit too much detail, maybe cut it back a bit, but smile and open up and say these things about yourself,
right?
So tell me about yourself, the great open-ended interview question, a favorite of mine, and every student has to do it. And when I taught interviewing in the school in Hoboken, I used to like put them up on the stage or like move the chairs around, and I'd have a student interview a student and they'd pull that right away. Tell me about yourself, Alex, right? So they're on the spot doing the job. Sort of when somebody does a resume, right? Or a LinkedIn profile, and they can have very good content in the LinkedIn profile, but they don't do that headline at the top.
Yeah, right?
And it's just, again, this is such a life skills learning process. And so I love that about the interview and that they learn how to answer, tell me about yourself. And then you're asking some other popular questions. So, of course, vintage interview question comes
in. Yes.
What are your strengths and weaknesses?
I was just thinking.
To learn to answer it in a way that the weaknesses aren't like serious, you know, deal breaker.
Or just no weaknesses. I don't really think
of any weaknesses, but here are my strengths. Right, exactly. So the strengths and weaknesses, and I say to them again, you're going to get this like your whole life. Right? So we're doing it now, and you're going to start to learn how to answer this thing. And I used to, sometimes I give them the example about a week, just don't say, I stink at math, right? I hate English. I hate reading, right? Because you know when you meet somebody, you said you have three kids of your own, you meet somebody and a kid will just do that. Do that in your interview, right? I take on so many things. I have a little trouble sometimes overcommitting. And then there are a couple of other, I think, hugely helpful questions to prep. There's the question, what do you see yourself doing in blank years?
Right?
So when I work with a college applicant, I'll say, how old will you be in 10 years? And they'll go, 27. I'm like, okay, 27, you're living this good life in your 20s. Can you close your eyes and see, you know, where do you wind up? What do you want to be doing? And how would you convey that, right?
Yeah.
By the way, when you go and you interview for an internship and a job and whatever, they're going to still ask you what you want to be doing in a certain amount of years.
That's a tough question for 17-year-old. Does anyone really know at 17 what they're going to be doing?
Of course not. And I think that's really important, Alex, that you mentioned that the colleges get that they're only 17 years old or whatever it is. They know that.
Exactly.
But the idea of just having a way to learn sort of to be poised and to say, you know, I'm not really sure. That 10 years is far away, but I know I love science and, you know, I like the arts and I could see myself maybe doing blank, right? So I like them to be prepared for that if it's a 5 years, 10 years down the road.
Wow.
And then there's the killer question for college interview, just the same as done in a corporate interview, of course, is why blank college?
Right, sure.
And if you can't go in
That's the preparation
question,
right?
The college should say no.
Yeah, that's the preparation one. That's the homework. Did you do your
exactly? And you know whether or not you've gotten to visit. Again, there are 360 views on the internet on this. You know the site. There are all these resources to learn it. People have friends. You know, students from their high school have gone on to the. There's so many sources where you can bring that into the response of.
All right, great. So switching gears a little bit here, what is the etiquette for a college interview? What are some things to keep in mind?
Yeah, we love these kinds of skills because we don't know if they're taught anymore, right? And particularly with students behind computers and learning virtually. So here's the deal, student, you know, whether or not your interview is in Starbucks or it's, you know, online, whatever, introduce yourself, smile, slow down, show that you have a sensitive side, be clear, show that you're kind, and please, please, please thank the interviewer, both when you finish up the interview and then in an email.
These sounds so obvious to people of our generation, but I don't think they're anywhere near that for this newest generation. I think
It's really lacking. It really is. I remember at the school I worked in, and they'd come to class with Chromebooks, and I'd say, "Okay, you're going to come," because in Georgetown, which was our case study, Georgetown requires an interview. It's an evaluative, not an informational interview. And the students themselves have to set it up. How great is that? That's like my favorite thing with college interviews. Mm. So I had them pretend, you know, their faux thing was they had to set up, or then they had to thank the interviewer for Georgetown. Right. And they'd have to take the Chromebook and write the email.
Yep.
Talk about learning a skill. Yeah, and that is huge in the college process, both setting up if you do, but certainly after the interview, doing that email. And then in other parts in the process, say a student is deferred or on a wait list or something like right. that, they've got to know how to deliver in writing as yep. well as verbally.
100%. In
the situation.
It just doesn't look professional. I mean, even if you're 17, like, it's just not, doesn't look good. Doesn't put you in your best light.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there special considerations for virtual interviews?
I'm glad you asked that, Alex. I think that there were a few things, and it's funny, it brings me back to doing a little like COVID Zoom teaching. And of course, you know, you and I both have clients who are all over the place, and we do this a lot. We know the dangers of doing virtual interviews for a student. You have a bird on their shoulder. I've had that, right? There's a cat, they're in their bed and the cat walks across the bed. I've had that, right? You're interviewing. Right? Mm. It's a life skill. Think about what's in your background, home or apartment you're going to be using for this.
Totally.
Check the microphone and make sure that, you know, from waist up, like you look okay.
From waist up. So then, you know, after an interview, what should a student do to follow up?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned before, like a thank you is a must. It's a great skill, and it just should be a little couple of sentences, charming, neat, clean email, right? And that's something I'm always teaching them during the application process. Again, if you're inquiring about information, you're setting up an interview, you're thanking an interviewer, you're writing because you got on a wait list, upbeat, sweet, short, clean.
Right. How soon after? Like 24 hours, next day?
I would say, yeah, within a day.
Yeah, within a day.
Within a day. And it's the same way we do in our businesses. Sometimes we rush an email and then we're sorry if we send it too soon. So maybe compose your email, sleep on it, then make sure it's clean, and then send it off.
That is smart. One piece of advice I'd use too is read it out loud.
Oh, yeah. You're so right about that. When I read their essays out loud, they get all, you know, really freak. And I say, you know, I know you don't like hearing your words out loud, but there's a reason we're doing this.
Right. Short, charming email. I like that. Charming. Yes. There's a shortage of charm these days.
Charm is a good thing to understand. It really is. I often will tell the student or the parent, if the parent's hyper about it, is you'll be surprised how often your student's going to get a response to their email. And they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's a formulated response and sometimes it's just a personal response. You know, thanks a lot. It was great meeting you too. I was glad to go to your school and to your high school. Whatever it is, they write back to students.
Right, right. Well, they're human beings.
Yeah.
Human beings, the other end of this process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're all components that you can showcase different things about yourself so that they could be brought together to give the college maximum information. And the interview is a rare chance to show off, again, your personal side.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, it's the only really truly human part of the of the application. Everything else is just on a piece of paper.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So just final one. What are some do's and don'ts in this whole process?
Oh, okay. So do's and don'ts. On the do side, we talked about preparation, the most important thing. The smile. Learning to pause a little bit. I don't know how your kids are, but we know a lot of our students need to slow down. We need to be more deliberate. And that's a life skill.
Yeah.
And they don't expect that necessarily, but just learn, look at your interviewer, pause a little bit, definitely to relax and just to show your enthusiasm, make yourself smile, right? And just be courteous and thoughtful, just bring that out. And the don'ts, they got to learn a lot. It takes a while, but don't say yes or no, right? Elaborate.
Right.
Fill in things that the interviewer might be curious about.
Right.
When the interviewer, and this is a favorite thing, oh my goodness, it almost didn't come up in our conversation. That student, in terms of preparation and a big do, is that student has to rehearse or write down questions for that interviewer. And my number I've used for a long time with my students is, Alex, when you go in that interview, I want you to have three questions for your interviewer.
Why three?
I always say three because one or two could be covered during the interview. So you always have another.
You want multiple ones. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. And, again, with a teenager, they haven't had this experience too much. They don't have a sense necessarily of how to shift in the conversation and the dialogue.
Right.
It's a life skill thing. So I tell them, whether it's virtual or it's in person, they won't mind if you pull out your notes and say, oh, I had jotted down these questions for you.
Oh, that looks good.
In fact, they'll be impressed. Other don'ts are, again, they're fun, kind of funny don'ts. Like, here's an example. I always love to check out the interviewers online, but don't tell them you've checked them out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I looked you up on LinkedIn.
Don't do it. Right. Yeah. Don't be a stalker. Right. Yeah. You don't want to do that. And then the same as this applies to essays, particularly supplemental essays like interviews. Watch some of the subjects that you speak about. Avoid things that are controversial.
Politically.
Why would you raise it when you don't have to?
Right. Like, how do I feel about Trump, for instance?
Right. Yeah. Political, religious, things like that. And I tell my students, you never know who's on the other side of that application.
Shut up.
And you have to remember that in this process. And that really does apply to the interview too. You can do so much good in a short time in a college interview. Why would you want to shake it up and mess it up?
Here are a few things that stick out to me after the second segment of my conversation with Dina. One clear theme that came out was that of authenticity. And I think that's increasingly a rare thing to produce in a world where AI increasingly is playing a role in intellectual pursuits of almost all kinds. AI can reproduce almost anything except for maybe authenticity, some sort of sincerity, some sort of personality. They have not yet found a way to simulate some sort of sincere, heartfelt voice. So that is something that needs to be at the center of the application. And I think it does sort of come through in, for instance, the essay. I think you can tell after having taught college essay classes before and worked with a lot of kids on these, I think it's pretty clear for me at least to tell which essays have been doctored and which ones have not. Based on that sincerity, based on that heart, does it sound like an automaton? Does it sound like an actual human being? Skilled readers can quickly tell the difference. And I think it really comes across in all parts of the application as well, sort of pervading personality that emerges from the details rather than sort of slapped together pieces attempting to form some sort of beautiful house. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And perhaps in a world where it's difficult to stand out with test scores, grades, all of those things sort of being excellent across the board, if you're talking about the most competitive schools, that is perhaps something that should be the focus in these applications. Another thing that stuck out to me was the vanishing art of etiquette. That part of the college interview is really about charm, about
introducing yourselves, smiling, being clear, saying thank you, sending follow-up emails, all those skills that really aren't taught anymore and are quickly going the way of the dinosaur. And yet, they're very important because they make other people feel like you care about them, that you have some sort of vested interest, that you have some sort of sincerity, to use a word that we talked about. If you're going to do that, you do need to have those follow-ups. You do need to sign off on an email that says your name. You do need to say, hello, whichever person I'm talking to. You do need to smile. But in a world where it's about cell phones, or it's about screen time, or it's about AI doing my work for me, I don't think a lot of young people have these skills, these highly undervalued skills. And perhaps that's why they struggle, particularly when they get to the work world. That's what we're finding a lot with young professionals. So definitely worthwhile to review those things as skill sets with kids that are entering into the interview process. You have touched on some of this along the way, but how has the interview evolved over the past 5 years or so?
Oh, okay, great. Well, as we talked about, a lot more things are done online and virtually than ever before. And that's so schools can reach more people, more students, mm-hmm. right? All over the world. Mm-hmm. So that brings in the ability to about the do's and don'ts and what you, if you're going to be in that situation. Understanding that sometimes a school will replace something like an alumni interview with a video. That's been a big trend, and there are different ways videos are done that a college might contract with an external firm, or they may say to the student, you've got 2 minutes, upload your video, here's our prompt. There's different things like that, and I follow that very closely every year. And my students always tell me what, you know, they see in their portals and so on. Another trend definitely has been in-person interviews used to be conducted in homes and offices. And it just doesn't happen that way anymore. They're almost always in a Starbucks type of place. And that's just for safety, security.
It brings in things.
We were talking about our etiquette. Well, do you want to be in the Starbucks and spill down your shirt, right? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So stay away from the Frappuccino too. You know.
Right. Exactly. Or if there, I remember a student telling me he went on an interview and there was a big screen wherever he met the interviewer and he was distracted. Things like that. Another thing is sort of how they've evolved, but also an awareness in the interview subject that there are two types of interviews, evaluative and informative or informational. And that the evaluative interview mm-hmm. is a heavy duty thing. It counts. So Georgetown is a prime example of that. There are other schools that are like that. And then there are schools that do informational interviews. And the biggest shift I have seen, and I definitely hear it from my students every year, is the admissions office will use students sometimes to conduct interviews.
The informational ones.
Yeah. Now, you know, if you're going to Wake Forest or, you know, whatever it is, and you're showing up on the campus or WashU or something, and a student's going to conduct your interview, it's probably not going to count.
At all?
At all. However, nobody should turn down the opportunity. It's a great life skill. Why wouldn't you? You could learn from somebody who's closer in age to you. You might hear a lot of things from a student that you'd never hear from an admissions officer.
Yes, that's true.
Right? And the other thing is you don't want to mess it up because then it might go in your file, even though it was only a student interview that was informational, not evaluative. I've definitely heard more every year of students doing the interviews.
Right. And too, in this world, you just never know what's going to be recorded.
You never know. You never know. Any experience like this is a good experience.
Yeah.
It's a character building experience.
Yeah. Okay. Trends that you're noticing that parents should be aware of strategically?
Yeah, well, we talked about parent involvement. And maybe here's where I'd underscore. Parents have to step away from the admissions process, like the parents who email admissions, the parents who call admissions. Just don't do it. Your student has an opportunity to build a skill. Why would you want the parent intervening? Maybe an analogy is every year I will get a very good athlete or two, right? And some are recruits. Sure. So in the recruiting process, it is very well known that the student has to initiate with the coach, not the parent. right? Okay. That the coach, they look at the roster, they get the emails, they email the coach or the assistant coach, they set things up, they send them a little video clip, but not the parent. So whether you'd categorize that as a trend, I want the parents to understand, turn these things over to your student to do.
And what's the impact of doing that?
Like, I think in something impersonal, like when do you have a tour, if you want to go to Dartmouth and take a 10 o'clock tour, a parent can do that, right? But right. if there's an informational question of right. some sort,
yeah. Yeah.
right? Parent can't do it. It just doesn't look good because some of those things will go in the student's file. Like you just never know. And I think, again, when you're talking about trends and, you know, we didn't get into the AI in this discussion, only about the interview bot. But in this era, more than ever before, the authenticity is what's going to count. How you present yourself in an interview, in a video, in an essay, authentically you.
Okay. So if you had one parting piece of advice for parents of students engaging in these interviews, what would that be?
I think the parting advice for a parent is please understand this is yet one piece of a multi-component process and don't pressure your kid about, you know, you have your interview tomorrow, you know, you have to eat these things and don't do this and don't go out after school. Just let them be themselves because you want the authenticity to shine through and it's just a step on this whole college app journey.
Here are some final thoughts that stuck out to me after my discussion with Nina. I think that it was interesting that we talked about sort of virtual interviews and the rise of virtual interviews. I think that trend will continue on. And knowing the etiquette surrounding Zoom, I think is fairly important in that way as well. What was interesting, too, was talking about recorded interviews versus live interviews, and that when you record yourself, I think that quickly becomes somewhat artificial because you can kind of polish and perfect it. I think it's very difficult not to fall into that trap of wanting to make it perfect. And again, what you're trying to do in an application is come off as a human being, where few of us are perfect. In fact, being a human being almost by definition means not being perfect at all, being very flawed. So doing it on the first take, I think, makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you want to prepare beforehand so it's not clunky and you come off as ill-prepared. But those recorded interviews, I think, are especially challenging for that reason. Again, at the end of the day, I think authenticity is a really important goal. So maybe there are some stumbles and stutters and maybe some answers are not perfectly well thought out and it's not certainly not written down, so that you're presenting not only the perfection and amazing parts of your resume, but also the human qualities of it as well. Another thing that stuck out was the idea that some kids maybe got hurt because they didn't know what counted. They didn't think that some of these interviews counted, whether they're with students or with alumni, it potentially didn't matter. I think it all matters. I think it all, especially in a world where everything is recorded, that data is immediately out there on you, even if it's not maybe put on film, but there's always going to be follow-up information that's recorded somewhere. So every interaction I would consider with a school, particularly that you're actually interested in, and you never know, even if it's your safety, if it might come down to that. But every interaction with these schools matters. So you should kind of pretend, at least as you're going through the process, that it's all going to be on the resume there somewhere. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be sincere. That doesn't mean you can't make mistakes. In fact, as we've talked about before, that mistakes are part of being human, and being human is part of getting into school. So not to say that it needs to be perfect, but it does need to be intentional, if that makes sense. You don't want to say anything that's going to come back and hurt you, like say you're disinterested in the school, for instance, or personal details that do not belong in this type of format. So that, I think, is particularly important to pay attention to in an age of media where everything tends to come back around to haunt us later.